once again, Lucas Kitchen here, and I'm just here to ramble today. I'm your rambling friend, as I started to call it. I want to talk about a few things, but really my main goal is just to keep you company for a little while you work or mow your yard or shear the sheep. If you happen to, I don't know, maybe you have sheep and they need to be sheared. I assume that still happens somewhere in the world today. So let's take a look at, the days, today's verse of the day. YouVersion, pulling it up now, says this, go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. You know, I heard a person, that's Matthew 28:19. Heard a person say once that this verse, the way that the language is constructed, is it can mean that he's telling them to go, but it also could mean that it could mean basically like as you go, like it's the assumption that you're going to be going somewhere, and the places that you go, you know, make disciples. It makes me think of that Dr. Seuss book called The Places You'll Go. And, maybe there could be like a Dr. Seuss version of the Great Commission here where it's like, you know, the places, wherever it is that you're already going, you know, make disciples there. Coffee break. I have iced coffee today. You know, it brings up the question, what does it mean to make a disciple? I don't think it means force somebody, right? You know, like, if you're a metal worker, you know, you forge metal and you force the metal to be a certain thing, but that's not how people work. You know, making disciples is a process of inviting someone ever deeper into a stronger relationship with the Lord, I guess would be one way to say it. Discipleship in Greek, mathetes, I'm not sure the pronunciation, but it's something like that, means just student, you know? And so there's some debate on, are you making them a student of Jesus or are you making them a student of you? And I would say, well, kind of both in a way. In a sense, it's like the ultimate foundation is that they'd be a student of Christ. For a time, they might be a student of mine, but most people don't have the same disciple maker their whole life. They don't have the same mentor their whole life. And so a student relationship that you have with someone that you're discipling might be temporary, and you might pass them on to someone else when they move to a different church or a different location or something. But in the long run, they are always a disciple of Christ, you know, so they're, a follower, an imitator, whatever word you want to put in there, they are, you know, disciples of him directly. So we're supposed to go, therefore, and make disciples of all the nations. My daughter, who is in, she's in, I don't know, fifth grade. And, she had a boy in her class. She was telling me this just, yesterday. She had a boy in her class who, the conversation started by, she said something about Adam and Eve, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but she mentioned something about Adam and Eve, and the classmate said, "Who's that?" And she was like, "Well, you know, Adam and Eve from the Bible." And he's like, "You know, I don't know what that is." And she said, "Are you a Christian?" And he said, "What does that mean?" And he had never heard, not only the gospel, but just any of it, you know? And so, we have this box of, little New Testaments. They're not the Gideon ones, but they're, who put those out? I can't remember who put them out. I should look that up, but they'll send you a box and you can make a donation, but they will send you a box free and for you to give away, you know? So we have a box of those and, so she grabbed one of those, and today she was going to take that Bible and give it to her friend, and she started to say, "What I'll tell him is, I'll give you this if you read it." And I said, "You know, I don't know you have to do that. I think you can just tell him that you'd like him to read it and give it to him one way or another. It's a pre-gift, you know, and then you could kind of, et cetera, et cetera." And so I was talking to her this morning on the way to school and kind of talking to her about, sharing the gospel and how simple it can be. And, so anyway, it'll be interesting to see if she goes and does that today. So we had the kids at the public school here for a number of years, but just recently we've moved them over to what's called a university academy. I'm not real clear on whether we're even like to call it public school. I guess it's public school, sort of, but it's associated with the with a university that's here in town. And so I'm not really clear on whether we're public school, but you know, I mean, if you're public school, homeschool, private school, there's always people that you can find that you come in contact with at your co-op or at your sports, team, your sports, you know, playing. Boy, you can tell I don't know how to talk about sports. Your sports playing. you could always find people that need to hear about the Lord. And so I'm excited that she spotted an opening, and I think she's gonna try to take it. So that's pretty cool. We got an interesting opportunity this last week. Speaking of that, we have a guy in our church. We have a small church that was a living room church not long ago, just meeting in our living room and my sister-in-law's living room and my friend's, the Goforth's living room. And, you know, we kind of bounce around, but this year we're renting a place now, and it's still growing. And so we're kind of looking for another spot. I think we've found a possible spot that I think is going to work. But anyway, that's not the point of the story. We have a guy in our church that connected us with this organization in town, which I can't remember the name of it, but basically what they do is, they are connected. I think it's kind of led by a pastor of this church that's in town called Hope Fellowship Baptist or Bible or something. I'm not sure. But Hope Fellowship's pastor will apparently call the city. I'm a little hazy on the details here, but this is my understanding. He'll call the city, and they have a list of people who are going to be fined by the city because their yard is just a wreck and like even kind of dangerous, you know? And so like, if you let your yard get out of control, if you don't mow your yard, the city probably won't make a big deal of it. Your HOA, if you have one, might, but if you're not in an HOA, this, you know, the city won't make a big deal of it if it's not mowed, but it can get so overgrown that, and it can get, you know, trees down and stuff where it's like the city will intervene and they'll say, you know, we're going to fine you, give you tickets if you don't, you know, if you don't get this fixed. And so this pastor, I guess it was his idea that there's an opportunity there. There's a really clear need, and it's kind of a low level of, awkwardness because you're in somebody's yard. You're not like in their house. You're not up all in their business. You're just, you know, and so the homeowner doesn't even have to be there. And so, and a lot of times they are there, I think, but they don't even have to be there. You can go and do something great for them, and they know that it's done by a church group. And so anyway, a guy at our church got connected, knew that pastor, and got us connected with it. And a few of us from the church went out and did that. And it was, man, it was super cool. You know, I'm not primarily the helps and service guy, you know, I'm the talk to people guy. But what I realized is you go and do a service project like that. I did some servicing, some physical stuff, but really there's always a place for someone that, well, you know, can talk to anybody. I could talk to a brick wall and sometimes have, And so there's a place for me too, you know, there's a place for me just to do work as well, but that's not as satisfying to me. What's really satisfying is talking to people, getting to know people, and if possible, talking to the homeowner and, you know, letting them know, kind of where we're coming from. So for the first house that we worked on, it was a huge crowd. There were college kids from Laterno University, which is here in town, and I graduated from there, so that was cool. I was kneeling down working on a chainsaw, and I heard that. So Laterno is a technical institute. Yeah, not institute. It's a technical university. So it's very engineering oriented, lots of computer science and stuff. So I was kneeling down working on the chainsaw. And, cause I had thrown the blade, of course, and, I was resetting the blade, and I heard near me this voice that said, this service project with all of these people is sort of like distributive processing, where you have multi-threaded, processors, and, you know, I just went into like making an analogy, a computer science analogy out of how people were working together in the yard, and I looked up and said, that sounds like Laterno. Are you guys Laterno? And they were like, yeah, we're from Laterno. And I didn't know that they were from Laterno, but when I heard it, I was like, no, I know my people, you know. I was not an engineering student. I was in the Bible and psychology department, but that was a really small, it was a pretty small department at the time. Because the school is really known for aviation and technical engineering and, you know, stuff like that. So anyway, so that was cool. Get to work with them. Got to see one of my old professors, that is the campus pastor now, Pat Mays, which was cool. So anyway, we did that. And then after that, we stood around and talked for like an hour, just hanging out, you know, after the job was done. And then I got a text that another guy from our church had been sent to another house, a different house. And I didn't know that. I was like, oh, there's other houses. And so I got the address and I went over there. And, and this house was a little bit more, in need of some work. There was a tree down and, you know, I could see why the city was saying they need to do a little work. So, but by the time I got there, most of the work was done. My buddy Billy has a sawmill and some equipment. And so he had a big telehandler there. And so that made quick work of the tree that was down. But like hanging around was the homeowner. This guy named Brian, he's about my age. But he had had some pretty bad luck. I didn't hear exactly what caused this, but he said he had screws in his knees and his legs and plates in his whatever. I mean, just like, you know, medical talk for not able to ambulate well around the yard. And so, and he even said, I used to be able to do this kind of thing, but I can't work in the yard like I used to, you know. And so he was pretty friendly and hanging around. And so I when we were getting close to being done with the work, we circled up, we said, hey, let's pray. We'll pray with Brian. And so, one of the guys, a guy named Steve that I met there, who was from the other church, he asked Brian, is there anything we can pray for you for? And so then we circled up and we prayed with him. But then he was happy to just kind of stand around and, you know, socialize a little bit. And so I leaned over to Billy and said, hey, I bet we could share the gospel with that guy. Cause I was like, he's friendly and he's willing to talk. And so, so we started to, you know, engage with him. And Billy's really good at this kind of thing. He's just really, comfortable with, I've never seen him intimidated by anybody. You know, he's really good at this type of thing. And so, started to talk to this homeowner, Brian. And one of the things that, that I really like to do is to try to figure out what do they care about? You know, what do they like? What do they love? What's important to them? And I noticed that he had an old Ford Ranger truck over to the side of his house. So I kind of struck up a conversation with him on that. And, you know, cause a Ford Ranger is, they're for a while there, they were really in demand. I don't know if they still are. They might be, but they're really in demand. I think because they stopped making them or something. And, you know, little small truck, they're just kind of a high demand. You can get the bigger trucks, F-150 and size up from there. But like the smaller trucks for some reason have always been really expensive. So maybe not always, maybe when they were making them, they weren't, but anyway, he just kind of stood out to me that, oh, there's kind of a unique thing. So I mentioned something about that and we got to talking about trucks, which I don't know much about, but I knew enough to kind of have an intelligent conversation with him. And then he said, yeah, but in the backyard is my baby. I was like, oh, you have a baby in the backyard? It's like my truck, and I can't remember what it was. It might have been like an S10 or something like that, which I don't know exactly what that means. Maybe it was a GMC or a Chevy or a Ford or a, I don't know. It was a bigger truck. It was like an extended cab. And so he had told the work crew that he didn't want anybody to go in the backyard, right? I mean, they offered to, you want us to clean up your backyard? And he was like, no, don't mess with the backyard. And so I kind of had that bouncing around, like there's something back there that he doesn't want people to see. But when he said he had his truck back there, I said, can I see it? And part of that was like, I wanted to have a connection with him. And I thought him letting me into the backyard, which he didn't want anybody else back there, him letting me into the backyard would kind of let me know if we were making, you know, if we were making a connection. And it, that sounds really strategic. It wasn't really quite that strategic, but like innately I was thinking like I need to have some connection with this guy, if I want to share the gospel effectively with him. And so, yeah, he said, yeah, come on back. And so we went back in the backyard and I saw why he didn't want people back. It was just a mess. It was no big deal. It was just kind of a mess. You know, and so, I think maybe he was feeling a little self-conscious about how messy it was or something. And his truck was back there just like, you know, flat tires, you know, but he had tires he was going to put on it and, you know, and had a plan, but it looked like it hadn't run in a long time, but he had these massive exhaust pipes on it. And he said it is so incredibly loud because he didn't go to the standard muffler shop. He hired, like Javier or something. He hired some guy to put on, and I don't know muffler terms very well. I think he said something about, what was it? I can't remember now, but just basically right out of the exhaust manifold, those exhaust pipes come. He said, Javier cut the, or whatever the guy's name was, he cut the catalytic converter out, he cut out the emissions control system, and he just put these pipes straight on to the engine. And so it is insanely loud. And it also wouldn't pass inspection. And I think that may be why it wound up in the backyard, because he couldn't get it past inspection. By the way, in Texas, for those of you that aren't in Texas, Texas has passed, and maybe some other states too, Texas has passed a law now that you don't have to have a car inspection anymore. A policeman can stop you if they think your car is going to kill somebody or if it's dangerous, but apparently you don't have to have an inspection anymore. So there I am with Brian. We're in the backyard and we're talking about his truck and, you know, I'm doing my best to sound intelligent enough about trucks, which it isn't all that hard in Texas. You just hear lots of terms. And so we talked for a while and then we came back around to the front and, you know, I started asking him questions about, you know, his life and where he was coming from, which by the way, if you're wanting to like share the gospel with somebody, it's really pretty important if you want it to be effective to show them some interest, you know, to, show him that you care about who they are and where they're coming from. And I was amazed by his stories. He was actually a really good storyteller. He had, oh man, he had this one story that he was in a wreck when he was a teenager. I don't know if he was 17 or something like that. And, he was in this wreck. He rolled his truck and should have been dead. I mean, the way it sounded, just should have been dead. He had a big speaker box behind his seat or whatever. And he rolled his truck and kind of, you know, went unconscious for a minute. And then a blonde man, and he emphasized blonde man, very blonde man, came to the window as he was kind of coming to and said something like, "I can't believe you survived that." And that blonde man and another man, I don't remember if the other man was blonde or not, but the other man pulled him out of his truck and went and his speaker box had been thrown. In the 90s, we had big speakers in the backs of our cars, right? So, his speaker box had been thrown through the windshield and, or something like that, and was like 20, 30 feet away. So the second man went and grabbed the speaker box and drug it over. And the first man sat him down on the speaker box and was kind of talking to him there for a minute. And then suddenly there was a police officer sitting next to him. And he said, Brian said, "Where did those two guys go?" Because they were gone. The blonde guys were just gone. It was like he just kind of blanked for a second. And then he realized there's a police officer sitting next to me on the speaker box and the blonde guys are gone. And the police officer said, he said, I'm off duty. He was off duty and was headed home. So he's still in uniform, but he was, you know, he's off duty. And the police officer said, "Bubba, I'm the only one here and I'm the only one that's been here. I found you. And when I walked up, you were sitting on this speaker box." And he was like, "Whoa." And so, you know, that was years ago, but his take on it was that he thinks he saw angels. I don't know what to think about it. I don't know if he was hallucinating. I don't know. But I mean, it just was super weird. You know, but you could tell the guy was a great storyteller because here I am retelling his story, you know. He also had a number of stories. So that was that story, by the way. That was it. It was just like, what was that about? What happened? And so, you know, after he said that, I kind of used that to say, well, I guess God had a plan for you. That wasn't your time or, you know, something like that. And then he went into stories about foster care. His dad was in the military and was at, Barksfield Air Force Base, I think, for a long time, and other places too, some in California. But for whatever reason, his parents got passionate about fostering kids. And so he said in a period of like 10 to 15 years, they fostered 120 kids. And some of the stories that he told about fostering were amazing. There was one story of a little girl who I think he said she had, I think he said she had multiple sclerosis or something like that. It's just one of those things that you just don't get better from. I can't remember if that was it or something else. But anyway, they just all kinds of trouble, medical trouble with her. And he said it's after having her for a year, they took her to the doctor and it was gone. And the doctor was amazed and they just couldn't wrap their heads around what happened. How is she better? You know, so that was an interesting one. Another one that was just heartbreaking was, a mom and baby showed up at the emergency room and the baby was just battered, just completely broken, ribs broken, arms broken, legs broken, etc. And the mom said something like, he said that the mom, they think that the mom really wasn't all there mentally, like something was kind of askew with her. And so she said something like, the baby's crying and I can't get him to stop. And I tried spanking her and she wouldn't stop. And so what he suspected is it was a bit more than spanking because she was just beat, you know. And so he said that that poor girl was in a cast from like neck to feet for, I don't know how long, a year or something. But she got better and when she got out of the cast, amazingly, and she was in a cast. So she was a little baby, you know? And so she was in a cast for like the first, I don't know, like year of her life or something. But he said when she got out of the cast, she was able to walk, which was really crazy because she couldn't learn to walk in a normal way, you know, cause she was in this cast. And so, and she grew up and is doing great, apparently. Golly, another story. Now, this guy was full of amazing stories. Another story he told was over the years, a few of the kids that they fostered, they adopted. And he said that, they were trying to adopt this one baby who happened to be African American. And this guy was a white guy, and I assume his family was white. And he said that it came to the day of the adoption and it was all lined up and they were excited. This was their first attempt at adoption. And he was a teenager, I think, by this point. So most of the fostering and adoptions, he experienced them as an older kid. So he was kind of a caretaker too. I mean, he was really involved in, you know, taking care of the kids. So anyway, they were going to adopt this kid. So they got in front of the judge. I think this was in Shreveport. And he said the judge, I don't understand why this would happen, but the judge told them, you're a white family and you're trying to adopt an African American kid. That kid is going to have so much trouble. And the judge denied the adoption. So, and, you know, in hearing the story, I thought there's got to be more to it than that. That just seems insane that a judge would deny an adoption, you know? So maybe it wasn't a good landing place for the baby or something. Maybe there was some other thing, but that was the way he told the story, is that they blocked him from adopting this baby. And it was all because the judge didn't want to send an African American baby into a white family. So I don't know. I don't know what to think of that. So anyway, man, I've done like 30 minutes on this guy. He was very interesting. We just talked and talked and talked. I mean, it was just a really neat thing. And we had a lot of shared references since we're about the same age. He's 2 years older than me, but like we grew up in the same, you know, in the same time. And so I don't know, common ground, I guess you'd say. So then kind of when we're wrapping up, and Billy was kind of there for part of the conversation and then kind of packing up his equipment part of the conversation. So he was kind of there, but he kind of came back about the time that I decided that we'd built up enough, social capital, so to speak, that that sharing the gospel with him might be effective. And by this point I kind of had suspected he may be a believer, just, you know, because of some of his stories. I thought this is the, you know, it just kind of struck me. But anyway, it just was really natural. Sometimes I would feel nervous about something like this, but with him, because we had worked in his yard, what I said was basically, hey, when we do this type of thing, I was talking like we've done it a lot. It was our first time, but you know, this is going to be the tradition as far as I'm concerned. I said, hey, when we do this kind of thing, we like to at least read a verse with the homeowner. Is that okay if we read a verse? And he was like, yeah, of course. And so, I pulled out John 3:16. I read it. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whoever believes in him will not perish but have eternal life. And then I just gave a really simple gospel presentation, you know, talked about the gift of eternal life and talked about belief and faith, and belief and faith, you know, are the same thing, of course, but it was just real short, you know, but it was really natural because we had talked a lot, you know, and he said, he just agreed. He just said, yep. I grew up Baptist. And so that's really familiar to me. And that was about it, you know, and he didn't, you know, I didn't pressure him to, you know, walk the sidewalk and, you know, rededicate his life or anything. What I figured is, you know, if you do something, I talked about this a little bit yesterday, if you do something nice for people, for someone, but you don't associate that kindness with the love of Jesus, then it might be a little bit of a missed opportunity, although the Lord can still use it, of course. But if you have the opportunity, if you do something nice for somebody and you have the opportunity to at least let them know that we're doing this out of a love for Jesus, or we're doing this because we think this is what the Lord would do if he were here, you know, whatever phrase you want to use, I think it really improves the value of that thing, because then you're giving credit, you're passing the credit on to the Lord, you know. And I think that's just it's a really special thing. And so there we were on his sidewalk sharing the gospel with him. And it was really simple, you know. And I know a lot of people get, a lot of people feel guilty for not sharing the gospel with strangers. But, you know, by the time I did, I didn't feel like he was a stranger. You know, I'd spent 15, 20, 30 minutes with, I don't know how long, maybe 30 minutes. And so it didn't feel like we were strangers anymore. And so I think, you know, except in extreme cases where like your jet plane is going down and you got 10 seconds before you're dead, you know, I don't think you ever share the gospel with a stranger. I think you try to, you want to make them a friend first. You know, now, I mean, there are probably cases where you can just share the gospel with it. It's not what I'm good at. I'll say it that way. I don't think I'm all that effective with strangers, but I'm pretty good in conversation, and I can usually make a connection with people within a few minutes, and then they don't feel like strangers, you know? But I'll tell you somebody that does seem to be good at sharing the gospel with strangers is my new friend, Clint. I met him just recently. Here's another interesting story. So, we did a men's hiking trip recently in Georgia. We've done this a few years. I think we'll do it somewhere different next year, but, we did this hiking trip, and, there was a guy coming that I hadn't met before. He was a friend of, the guy that organizes it. And this guy's name was Clint. And, Clint sent us an email before he came, and he said, I have a goal of sharing, I think he said something like 50 gospel tracts in the airport, on the way in. And he was actually driving in, I think, but he was going to pick up some of the other guys from the airport just as kind of a favor. And he thought, I'll take that opportunity to, you know, to pass out tracts. And so I thought, oh, well, that'll be interesting. Cause you know, I don't really do that. I never do that. I think I would say that I never do that. I mean, we make tracts, but, and we use them sometimes for various things, but I'm not the pass out tracts to strangers kind of guy, you know? So anyway, Clint came and he picked up a couple of the guys. And, coffee break here. Actually, on the way in, I think he just picked up one guy named Sam. And, so he went, you know, I guess he parked and he sets a timer for himself. And, I think he set like 30 minutes, and he came into the airport, you know, and So it's not just simply passing out tracks. He's got a method that he follows that is pretty interesting. And I didn't see it in action because he didn't pick me up, but we talked about it a fair amount. And Sam saw it. And then also, another friend, Gabriel, and his son, were on the trip. And this guy, Clint, took them to the airport on the way out of town, and they got to see him do it. And so I kind of heard from two different people or three different people. So what he'll do is he usually, when he's trying to connect with people and make a contact, to give them a tract or a gospel bracelet or something like that, he will generally look to talk to employees if it's like the airport. And he said that's valuable because, partially because they're kind of a captive audience, but they're also being paid to do customer service in some way, whether that's a custodian or someone working at the restaurant or whatever, at a restaurant. They're being paid to be in some type of service to customers. And so they're already kind of in that mode of like, I need to be kind and I need to listen to what people have to say. And so he'll come in and usually he'll find some, he'll pick somebody out, and then he'll find something to comment about. Like, Gabriel said he commented about a lady's necklace or something like that. I don't remember if it was, I think it was a necklace. You know, and he said he'll walk up and was just like, hey, it's a beautiful necklace. That's, you know, really nice. And then that from there, build a conversation, generally a short conversation. And the couple of things he said about it is, if he's got time, he'll try to engage them and have them read a verse, and then he'll leave a tract with them. And in talking to him, like he didn't like immediately come across as the kind of person that's going to get up in front of a big crowd and, you know, and just share. He said he really is kind of nervous, but about this sort of thing, but he's realized a way of rethinking the whole thing that has made him able to do it. And it had to do with, he used this term, minimal viable product. And, I am not actually sure what he meant by that part of it. I understood the other part, but let me look that up while I'm thinking about it. And see what that generally means in business terms. 'Cause his uncle, I think, or someone in his family was like a business motivational speaker or something like that, and had kind of these teachings about this. Or some other person who was at a conference. I don't know. I don't remember exactly, but, minimal viable product. What is that? We'll see what that is. MVP is the simplest version of a product that you can release to the market to test your idea. It has just enough core features to solve the main problem for early adopters without spending time and resources building extra functionality. Wow, that is actually really valuable, because in the app that I've been building, that's exactly what I was thinking, is I need to be careful about trying to add all these extra features that aren't the main purpose. Wizard of Oz, MVP product looks automated, but people handle things manually. What are we talking about here? I don't know. There's a big article here. Imagine you want to build a ride sharing app. A full product may include driver ratings, payment systems, advanced GPS, promotions, etc. An MVP might just let users request a ride and pay cash to the driver. That's enough to test if people want the service. Got it. Okay. So he took that idea, which is like a business idea, and he applied it to sharing the gospel. And I don't know. It really unlocked it for him. He was really nervous about it, apparently, and it was just like out of his comfort zone. But then he started thinking about this idea of minimal viable product and what the, you know, and how, and started to think of like a rejection as actually kind of like a beta test for figuring out what, how do you put a track in someone's hand and they take it, you know, and then you're done, you know. And so rather than thinking of it like he has to have this fully efficient, fully featured presentation, he started to think about it like each attempt is data collected. You know, it's information gathered. And if 10 people in a row won't take the track he's trying to hand to him, then that's telling him something about his process. You know, so he started to think, and I think he's in accounting. And so this really fits, is like, you know, data and information and stuff like that. And so he started to think of it like, you know, like an experiment. And each interaction is, you know, getting information, and he's apparently gotten enough information to be pretty good at it from what the guys said. They said that he really has a knack for it. He's able to get the, you know, he's able to have a meaningful conversation with somebody in a pretty short amount of time. He's able to put a track in their hands. And a lot of times they seem like it was a valuable interaction. Like in one of the cases, One lady actually pointed at him at some other friends who were also employees and wanted him to talk to them or something like that. So that tells you, you know, when you start getting shared, that means something's working. Something's happened. So anyway, that was really interesting. And he said that, there's one more little thing that he said that was kind of interesting that I think was helpful. It was about that same idea of rejection. And, he said that it also helped him to think about it like he's just sowing seeds. It's not his responsibility to get them to the belief point, you know? He's just sowing seeds. And every once in a while, he gets to be the one that actually waters or maybe even leads someone to Christ. But most of the time, he's just sowing seeds. And knowing that has taken the pressure off. It's like, I'm just trying to put a track in somebody's hand and, you know, hopefully they'll read it. And he has a number of tracks. He pulled some out and showed me. One of them, he said, if I think that the person is from the Islamic faith, then I use this track. And he had one. It's pretty good. You know, it talked about, and it wasn't a negative bash the Quran kind of thing. What it did was, it looked at how the Quran reveres Jesus. And if you don't know that, it's worth looking into. The Quran really says some positive things about Jesus. Now, it also, you know, in the Islamic faith, they also think that Jesus wasn't, oh golly, what is it? I think they think, somebody check me on this, but I think they think that Jesus wasn't actually resurrected. Is that right? That he was a prophet. And so he holds a place in the Islamic faith. It's a reduced place, but it's still a place of honor, you know? And so this tract he has, and I don't remember who produced it, but it looked pretty good. The tract builds on that. It doesn't go negative. It goes positive. It takes a positive thing, because that is a positive thing. I mean, there's a negative aspect to it in that, you know, Jesus is kind of degraded in that faith. He's downgraded, I guess you'd say, demoted, but he still has a place of honor and that can be used. So anyway, Clint will, if he suspects someone is Islamic, which is kind of hard to just know looking at somebody. But if he gets a sense that they're Islamic, then he has that ready. He said, there's certain head wrapping, what did he call it? I don't know. There's certain head apparel that clues him in to that they are Hindu, and he's got a track for that. And so there's some clues that he'll try to follow. And it's just like, it's these quick little interactions. It's, you know, a minute or two maybe of a conversation. And then his goal is to get a track in their hands and then kind of get out of the way. And then that track lives somewhere on their shelf, or, you know, and they maybe read it, maybe they don't, but he's done his work. You know, he's planted the seed, and then he can move on. And I just think, man, how cool is that? That he's figured out a system for him that's doable, that he can make happen. And so he did that both on the way in and the way out. And I think he also did it. I want to say he did it at the Buc-ee's on the way in too, you know, stopped in there. So that was neat to talk to him, because it was a very engineering approach to sharing, you know, gospel tracks and stuff like that. So, it's a really neat guy. Man, I've gotten a lot of minutes here out of just relaying stories from other people. That was actually kind of fun. I need to think about that for future episodes. Just like, that's probably the best thing, is just tell you stories that I've heard from other people. So maybe I could transition to what I'm working on. I'm working on a few things. I'm working on an album. I think I told you, I would talk a little bit about that. I don't think I'm going to go into that today, but I was up at 4:30 this morning working on some beatbox stuff for it. It's not like a beatbox album, but I wanted to do a song. I had this song that was a rap song. I'm not a rapper really. I had what I would call like nerd rap. It was, most of what I'm doing is on the piano and guitar and drums, you know, stuff like that. But I thought, oh, it'd be cool to have like a kind of a rap song. And so I did that, and then it was like, nah, it's just not quite right. And then I got excited about like, oh, it should be beatbox. It should be, but like studio beatbox, which is different. What I mean by that is like, it's multi-track. It's not just one mouth on a mic. It's, you know, you're doing all the sounds with your mouth, but they're layered so that you can get a lot more out of it. Kind of like looping. So anyway, I don't want to go into that, but anyway, I was up really early working on that. I'm excited about how that one's turning out. It's pretty cool. I think the songs are actually something. I mean, some of them are that, I wrote a song about my friend Billy, that I just, it really, I mean, man, I cried while I was writing it. His story is, pretty incredible, but we'll talk about that on another day. I'm also working on some writing things. I've got a book idea that I'm noodling with, and I've written some stuff, and I don't feel like I haven't quite hit the rhythm yet. It's, I think I'm going to call it doctrinism. And doctrinism is a term that I've coined that basically is the unhealthy fixation on doctrine to the exclusion of discipleship. And so what I mean by that is like when we do doctrinal tasks in that, and that replaces our discipleship. So we aren't taking steps of discipleship, but we're taking steps of doctrinism, you know, and so that might include like, you know, constantly scrutinizing other people's doctrine and theology, or maybe being in doctrinal debates, or maybe, you know, endlessly learning, systematic theology, but being so busy with that and that we, you know, we avoid actually being active disciples, you know, and I've wondered if it might be a form of acedia. Acedia is this, it's this old word. Sean Lazar talked about it at our hiking trip. It's this old word that basically means kind of like, spiritual depression, you know, like where you stay busy, but you stay busy with things other than things that are spiritually valuable, you know, you kind of intentionally let your spiritual life go dormant. And I wonder if doctrinism can kind of be like that. It's like you let your actual spiritual life, fruits of the spirit sort of wither on the vine while you fixate unhealthily on, doctrinal matters. Some doctrine obviously is needed. I mean, we need good doctrine, but we don't need doctrine at the exclusion of discipleship. So anyway, I'm working on that. And the difficulty is that it's hard for me to write without there being personal examples and illustrations from my life in it. But the difficulty is that this is a pretty negative subject, and the examples I have are really personal, and there's people who are still out there alive today that would be hurt if I talk about how things went, you know, and that's a challenge. I don't know what to do with that. And it keeps blocking me from saying some things that I feel like I need to say. It's like, I don't know where the line of gossip is. I don't know where the line of like healthy. I don't know. It's like, I know we need to talk about this stuff. And my method for talking about things is to talk about my experience, you know? And so I don't know. I'm wrestling with that. I don't want to hurt anybody, and I don't want to ruffle feathers, so to speak. I don't want to be fodder for more division. But I also want us to be better. I want us to change, you know? So I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to do that. I'm probably just going to keep writing, and we'll see if I can publish it. Maybe let Sean edit it down to, whittle it down to something that's acceptable. So, yeah. So anyway, lots of things. It's a Friday, so the weekend's coming up. My youngest son has a birthday tomorrow. He's turning 2, and he's just getting potty trained, which is really exciting. And we are, I don't know, man, life is so good. We just pretty often, I kind of have this thought of like, golly, how could it be any better? You know, and I'm usually a positive person, you know, but it's like, it's hard to imagine things being better than they are, you know, and, so especially having kids, it's like, I always wanted kids, you know, from a young age. I was putting my second to youngest. I have 4 kids. I was putting my second youngest to bed the other day. And that just kind of struck me as like, this is what I always wanted, was to have kids and to, you know, I mean, I wanted other things too, but I knew that in my life, this is what I wanted. I wanted to have kids, and I'm so thankful that I have it, you know. It's amazing. It's amazing to have these little people who have sprung from my loins. That is a really gross way to say that. Sorry. But it just strikes me as so uncanny sometimes that this little person came from us, you know, but also came from God. And they're just such a gift, and they're such a joy, and they're very frustrating too sometimes. For some reason today, my second oldest son decided to cry when it was time to get out of bed, and he covered his eyes with his hands, and he said, the light is just too bright, and he started to cry. I'm like, dude, that's the same bulb you've been seeing every day of your life. What's up? I mean, what's going on? So then I got mad, and, you know, I was 2 or 3 times in. I was like, okay, buddy, time to get up, you know, and he's covering his eyes. And so then I kind of said, you're making me mad. Get up. And then I left. I was like, man, I do not want that to be the way that we are, you know. I don't want that to be the thing they remember. And hopefully their memories are just really bad. That's what I'm hoping for, is that on those things, their memory is really bad. And I'm sure there were things that my parents, mom and dad, you can say whether there are, there's probably things that my parents wish they hadn't have done. I just don't even remember, you know. Maybe that's why our memories are so vague. And maybe God just knew that that's a type of grace, is just forgetting, you know. But we patched it up by the time we got him to school. But it just, you know, I hate sending him off in the morning with a grump fest. You know, by the time they were going out to feed the chickens though, he was okay. So, So anyway, well, I think that will probably do it for today. I have talked to you for 54 minutes and 42 seconds. I probably won't be back until early next week, but I hope, actually, the kids are off from school on Monday, so I probably won't be around till Tuesday. But I hope you can manage without my company for the next, the next 3 days. I'm finding, I'm really enjoying this. It's probably like therapy, you know, to just be able to sit here and talk for an hour. It doesn't feel difficult, and I'm just relaying things that I've heard. And it makes me wonder, in a day that I've talked for an hour, that I start the day by talking for an hour, if I'm less likely to machine gun talk my friends, if I might be a little better at listening because I've gotten so much of my talking out. I don't know. Maybe we'll find out. So anyway, thank you guys for listening, and I guess we'll talk to you on Tuesday.